for inviting me to speak here. And also thanks to Misha Lubich and Misha Yampolsky for inviting me here for the whole year, which has been quite wonderful so far. So anyway, I'm going to explain a little bit about the error that I found in the classical proof of Andreev's theorem, and hopefully enough to convince you that there is an error in the proof, show you why it's a reasonable error that needs to be fixed, and advertise my work so maybe somebody will look at it and see how I fix it. So the idea of Andreev's theorem, that's a little bit small, I apologize, is that you take some combinatorial description of a polyhedron, of a compact hyperbolic polyhedron, but combinatorial description is just combinatorial description of a polyhedron, and Anyway, you take some combinatorial description of your polyhedron, this cell complex on S2, it has a cell out at infinity, and you take some chosen dihedral angles, in this case all of them non-obtuse, and you ask, does there exist a compact hyperbolic polyhedron realizing this data? Well, Andreev's theorem gives you a really nice characterization of which compact hyperbolic polyhedra exist. And in fact, the criteria are linear inequalities on the dihedral angles, which is a special case resulting from the fact that you're restricting to non-obtuse dihedral angles. So it's a very lucky situation. But nonetheless, it's one of the first situations covered on compact hyperbolic polyhedra. And it's also a really fundamental part of hyperbolization of Hockin manifolds. It gives you the base case from which you build up using the skinning map to hyperbolize these Hockin manifolds that are atoroidal and irreducible. So anyway, let me flash the statement of the theorem at you. An abstract polyhedron will just be a trivalent cell complex on S2 with a couple of additional conditions which are equivalent to just saying that the dual complex is a simplicial complex on S2. And so given such a complex on S2 describing the face structure of your polyhedron, and given a choice of non-obtuse dihedral angles, AI, then so long as these, and as long as your combinatorial polyhedron has more than five faces, this is a slight, Andreev's theorem actually covers five faces as well, but the statement's more complicated. As long as your combinatorial polyhedron has more than five faces, then if your dihedral angles satisfy these four linear inequalities, which are generated by the combinatorics of your abstract polyhedron, then there exists a compact polyhedron with that face structure and those dihedral angles. It has to be trivalent because we're a priori restricting to non-obtuse dihedral angles, and this then you can take and compact polyhedra, so you can take a finite vertex, pull it to the origin of the Poincaré ball model, and check basically that it has to be trivalent. And in fact, the resulting polyhedron is unique up to hyperbolic motions, so there is only one. And I'll have to explain to you what these prismatic three circuits are and what these prismatic four circuits are. The other conditions are just that the dihedral angles are positive, that the sum of the dihedral angles at an edge, at a triple of edges meeting at a vertex, is strictly greater than pi, and then these two conditions about prismatic circuits, which I'll explain momentarily. Let me just show a couple of the references up here, and then I'll go to the chalkboard and we'll actually start doing some math. These first two are the Andreev classical papers in the Svornik. One's the translation. The next three are what seem to me to be the other proofs of Andreev's theorem that are readable and give the full details, like the statement that I was interested in. There's the one by Bowers and Stevenson, which uses the conformal structure out at infinity on the sphere at infinity. And then there's the one by Riven and Hodgson, and then by Hodgson, which gives a classification in terms of polyhedra in the de Sitter space, which is the space dual to the hyperbolic tree space outside of the light cone. Now, I'd like to say that Andreev's proof is much more concrete than the one by Riven and Hodgson. So, if nothing else, I think that having a more concrete proof that actually can be implemented on the computer is valuable. That said, I have a computer implementation of it, and that's this last paper. And the other ones are my preprint with John Hubbard and Bill Dunbar, which was submitted to Annales Fourier in December of 2004, and my French thesis on the subject. So anyway, let me explain to you what the issue is, what the combinatorial error is, and something about how we get around it. Okay, so the point is that it's modern technology. You never get to practice with these things before your talk, so it's always, you know, whatever works. Anyway, the point is that Andreev's classical proof of Andreev's theorem uses the method of continuity, and what you do is you construct a manifold of polyhedra realizing a combinatorial structure C, which I'll call PC, script PC. This is equal to, and I won't say what the topology is, but this is equal to the manifold compact hyperbolic polyhedra realizing C. Realizing C means that there's a cellular homeomorphism from the boundary of your polyhedron to the combinatorial polyhedron. This is, you can check once you've defined the topology on this, this is a manifold of dimension 3F manifold. 3F minus 6, where C has F faces. And you can also check that E. So let me put in a side here. C has F faces, E edges, and if need be, V vertices. So you can check using trivalency and the fact that your combinatorial polyhedron is a cell complex on the two-sphere, so Euler characteristic arguments, that E is equal to 3F minus 6. And so that you actually have a map from the space of polyhedra realizing C, you have a map alpha from PC to R to the E by measuring dihedral angles. You take your polyhedron, you measure the first dihedral angle, second dihedral angle, etc. These are marked polyhedra, is how we construct the manifold. Aha. Well, we consider this a hyperbolic polyhedron is a finite intersection of half spaces in H3. So we consider it to be a quotient of a subspace of the space of half spaces to the F by the group of hyperbolic motions. And the group of half the space of half spaces is three-dimensional. So. So. Yes, exactly. There are a lot of wonderful things that happen because you have non-obtuse dihedral angles. The first is that these dimensions agree. Well, that's an important part of the proof. That's part of the proof where Andreev had some issues. So I haven't claimed that yet. The empty manifold is a manifold of every dimension, at least that's what I was taught back in the day by Peter Teichner at UCSD. Anyway, here's a map from possibly the empty manifold to R to the E. They're manifolds of the same dimension. Using the topology that we give, this map of measuring angles is continuous. That's the point of how we set it up. Okay, I want to define PC naught contained in PC to be the metric subspace of polyhedra that have non-obtuse dihedral angles. this is not a priori a manifold, but we'll see that it's a manifold with boundary at some point. And the idea of the proof consists of the setup and then proving that PC is not empty in appropriate situations. The setup is you show first, well, I need to find one more term, the set of linear inequalities given by Andreyev's theorem for a given C defines a convex polytope in R to the E. So I'll define AC contained in R to the E to be the polytope given by the four Andreyev conditions. Which might be the empty polytope for certain C, and in fact it is. Okay, so the first thing you do, you show that alpha of PC naught is contained in R to the E, is contained in AC. This is a necessity of these conditions. This is relatively easy. You show that alpha from PC to R to the E is injective. This is a Cauchy rigidity style proof. In our paper, there's a very nice Cauchy rigidity style proof by Hubbard and Dunbar that I've never seen anywhere else, and I think it's quite nice, so I'd like to advertise that. Injective. Which, by invariance of domain, implies that alpha is a local homeomorphism from PC to R to the E. And the third step is that alpha from PC, not this time, to AC is proper. These combine to form the idea that you have a local homeomorphism from PC naught to AC, which is proper and injective. So Andreyev's theorem is the statement that this map is actually a homeomorphism, and we just need to show that when AC is non-empty, PC naught is non-empty. Okay? And that's the hard part of Andreyev's theorem. I'll write it big over here. I mean, of course, this is some work. I mean, it remains to show. And I'm going to immediately restrict to the subclass of combinatorial polyhedra, which have none of these prismatic three circuits, which I realize I didn't define yet. So let me define what these are. I'll say that prismatic four circuits are the analogous thing, but with four edges. And then we'll go on from there. So if you have three edges in C, and if there is a three circuit in the dual to C intersecting these three edges, so the green thing is a three circuit in the dual to C, if it intersects these three edges, this is what I'm going to call a three circuit. If no pair of these edges meet at a vertex, this is a prismatic three circuit. the identical definition works for four circuits. So from now on, I'll actually be talking about the combinatorics in terms of the dual complex always, because it's easier to draw simplicial complexes than cell complexes, for me at least. So alternatively, in the dual complex, a prismatic three-circuit is a three-circuit in the dual complex, which is not a boundary of a face. So you must at least have something, maybe just like this, or maybe more, inside and outside of your... Yes. In fact, there's a lemma that you prove that that's equivalent. Yeah. It's there are a lot of little details that I'm hiding, but that's exactly true. For the case of three circuits, they either all meet at a vertex or it's prismatic. There's a dichotomy. So. Okay. So what... Let me go back to this. I claim that by a cutting and gluing argument, and also by a truncation argument, which are easy in comparison, the hard part of the proof is showing is for C with no prismatic three circuits. Which I'll call simple C, as opposed to compound or truncated. And one can check that given the linear inequalities that I posted on the computer, that AC is always non-empty when C is simple. 2 pi over 5 for every angle works is in this polytope when C is simple. So really, I just want to show PC not is not empty for C simple. And this is really a almost by hand construction to show that this is true. No prismatic three circuits. So it's an almost by hand construction to show that this is true. Given a C that's simple, I want to either construct it by hand or take one that I've already constructed by hand, deform it using this. I already have the homeomorphism from that PC naught to AC to deform it to bring some vertices out to infinity and then push it just the right way to produce a polyhedron realizing the combinatorics that I want with non-obtuse angles. So let me just say this. You construct by hand without even that polyhedra, which I call the prism and the split prism, PRN, the N-faced prism, and DN, which are, in fact, the dual complexes. There will always be a vertex at infinity in my dual complex. So this is dual to a prism. And the split prism is like so. I take one of these vertices down here and pull it apart into two. So there's a by-hand construction of polyhedra with compact polyhedra with non-obtuse dihedral angles realizing these two combinatorics. And then the deformation theory allows you to prove the following beautiful fact, which is really great from Andreev, is that, so lemma, if C and C prime are simple and differ by an elementary move, which I'll define in a moment. Then PC not is not empty if and only if PC prime not is not empty. So an elementary move is just you have your simplicial complex and you have two triangles somewhere in your complex meeting along an edge, and you just flip the edge. So if you can find a sequence of elementary moves staying in the category of simple combinatorial polyhedra, reducing to either PRN or DN, you've proven Andreyev's theorem. So really the hard part of Andreyev's proof is the combinatorial part. And in fact, as long as you don't have PR, the prism, you just reduce to DN is what you do. And the characterization of DN that I want to use is that it has a vertex, which I'll always put the vertex with highest adjacency at infinity, like I have here. Well, in this case, there are two. There's this one and the other one. And DN happens to have the vertex at infinity with adjacency f minus 3. You see, the vertex at infinity is adjacent to all vertices except for these two and itself, I guess, if I'm going to say f minus 3. Yeah, there are two that is not adjacent to.
But there are two vertices.
Yes, I'm sorry, yeah. I always have some skewed impression, yeah. Yeah, of course. There's a symmetry. Yeah. There is some vertex with this f minus 2, if you consider a vertex to be adjacent to itself, adjacency. And so, what we want to do is we want to find a way to increase the adjacency of the vertex that has maximal adjacency by 1 by doing elementary moves, always avoiding prismatic free circuits. And that's the name of the game in Andreyev's proof. So what you do, I've pre-prepared a nice combinatorial polyhedron here. And what Andreyev does is he wants to take some interior vertex. So you take the vertex with maximal adjacency, put it at infinity. Its link, I will call the outer polygon. That's this green thing. And we want to increase the length of the outer polygon by 1, always avoiding prismatic tree circuits. So you want to take some interior vertex, a vertex inside of the outer polygon, for instance. This one, you want to see two points on the outer polygon that it's adjacent to, and then do a whitehead move on an edge like that, because doing a whitehead move like that will then increase the length of your outer polygon by 1. The problem is, well, in this case, the problem is very simple. Here, we already have a prismatic 3 circuit connecting through the vertex at infinity. But that's not a big issue. What Andreyev recommends and claims works in his proof is that you should take every interior vertex and condition it in an appropriate way. For each interior vertex, say this one, you should look and see to what vertices on the outer polygon it's adjacent to. There's one. There's a linear sequence of them here. Of course, I've missed an edge. There's a linear sequence there. And then there's 3 over here. And you should do whitehead moves to make it so that each interior vertex is connected to only one consecutive sequence of vertices on the outer polygon. So you would do a whitehead move like this. You would do whitehead moves here. Sorry, elementary moves. just on the edges connecting your interior vertex to the outer polygon in the components that you want to eliminate. And now you see that this vertex is only connected to the outer polygon here. If you've done this successfully, you then have, and I think that that was the only interior vertex that was connected to more than one linear sequence of vertices on the outer polygon. If you have done this successfully, you get what I call the, I need another color, what's called the inner polygon. There is some annular annular region surrounding possibly some very nasty combinatorics inside of this polygon, and this annular region gives you a buffer to allow for avoiding prismatic through circuits that may cut directly through the middle of your combinatorial polyhedron. Once that's done, you can take an interior vertex on the inner polygon that's either connected to only two consecutive vertices or connected to that's connected to only two where you can do some conditioning to make that happen. Once that's done, you can then split open there. The problem is in this conditioning of the interior vertices. Trying to eliminate additional components of connections to the outer polygon is dangerous and doesn't always work by doing this. For instance, when I was writing a computer program to implement Andreyev's original proof, I was working with the dodecahedron, for lack of a better idea for what to try first, and I encountered a combinatorial polyhedron much like this one. It probably won't have 12 faces, but you'll get the idea. Much like this one, for which you have three interior vertices, and one of them, this one here, is connected to exactly two points, which are non-adjacent. The fact that it's connected to only very few points, in fact one in each adjacency order, is what gives you a problem. You do the Whitehead move on the connection, like Andreyev suggests, and you immediately get a prismatic three circuit. Andreyev just says that you can clearly always do this, these Whitehead moves, to eliminate these connections. And evidently, nobody ever read that far in the proof because the deformation theory was so nasty and unpleasant. And so he gets the part that's clear and, you know, who knows. But Hubbard did, and he and I thought it was true, and then I programmed it on the computer, and it's not. The real problem is that it's not just simple examples like this. Given any simplicial tree, you can form an example for which, you see, for this one, there's an easy fix. The easy fix is to borrow a vertex of connection from one of these. You do a Whitehead move like so. Then you have two connections here. Well, I did it on the wrong side. And then you can do like that. And because you have two connections over to here, you don't generate a prismatic three circuit. So that would make the error seem trivial and easy to fix. But if you had had exactly three connections from each of these endpoints, then you couldn't borrow, because an endpoint connected to two, I mean, this is getting kind of vague. You have to look at the paper for the details. But the point is, given any simplicial tree, there's a way to make something which you can't even just borrow a vertex from, where you have to actually use the global topology of the situation, at least very, very slightly, to prove that you can always do these moves. And you have to prove that you get every single one of the simple polyhedra in your proof. And it's proving that you get all of them, not just giving a proof that works for everyone you can think of. That's the hard part of the proof of Andreyev's theorem. So here's a simplicial tree. Why not draw it in green? And there's a way to fill in using your simplicial tree as the complex of interior vertices and interior edges to make a combinatorial polyhedron for which you have to use our proof. And since there are a lot of simplicial trees, this is a motivation for why our proof is necessary. So you see, you can just sort of go around and fill in a sort of a minimal buffer around this tree. Once that's done, then you get some example for which you can never borrow a vertex from an endpoint, and for which there's never a non-endpoint in the interior vertices, which is connected to more than two consecutive vertices in one of its components of connection to the outer polygon. So you have to use the fact, I know I'm running over time, I'll give the last 2 minute spiel. You have to use the fact that if you have you take an endpoint of your interior complex, you march in, one, two. If you keep going and never reach an interior vertex which is connected to more than two points on the outer polygon, then you'll eventually reach an endpoint and you'll have the prism, which, well, somewhere, I already said you could construct. Otherwise, you have to have some branching in the interior complex, or an interior point along this linear sequence, which is connected to a component of more than two. So you use this branching, and because of the branching, you're allowed to then do the Whitehead moves, as prescribed by Andreev, to at least make that point connected to only one. See, now this interior point is connected to only one point on the outer polygon. But it's just one point now, so you still don't have something you can work with. Then you use that because of the minimality type conditions on how you have around this end of your interior complex, that you can work your way back out because you have a canonical form of this thing. So you work your way back out using this canonical form, and eventually you get an interior vertex which is connected to exactly two consecutive points on the outer polygon, which you can split open. But proving that this works is the name of the game, and I'm not going to do that here. So, thank you. Yeah? It works for ideal polyhedra that have non-obtuse dihedral angles. Yeah. You can just take an appropriate limit. Our deformation theory allows for taking two vertices together to a single point that's four valent. In fact, that's how we do the Whitehead moves geometrically. And then taking a single vertex